Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, Jack Kilgrove with you up until 10:35 this evening. Paving the way for the nightly sports call with Richie Walsh and Andrew Filipponi on KDKA Plus and right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. The Pitt Panthers coming off of a bye, 4-0. You can kind of flip the page from it. It's now 0-0 as the Panthers will begin ACC play on Saturday at Chapel Hill against the Tar Heels of North Carolina. We're going to break the game down. We're going to kind of assess the first four games of the season with Pitt beat writer for the Post-Gazette, Stephen Thompson, who joins us now on the Fan Hotline. Stephen, good evening, my friend. I'll ask you right off the bat, if you had to grade games 1-4 for the Panthers, where would you grade them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say anything other than an A-. I mean, and I think you can point to nothing more than the 4-0 record. I mean, you can get a little deeper into the fact that the offense looks really improved. They've got some great linebackers. I think they're figuring out some other stuff on the defense, but they've already surpassed their win total from 2023, which I think was the primary goal for this year. They've set themselves up really well to get back to a bowl game, and all of a sudden they look like contenders in the ACC, which by extension makes you a contender for the college football playoffs. So it's been a really interesting start to the season. They are obviously flawed, but to make it out of that first third of the year undefeated is pretty remarkable. Not something that a Pitt team has done in a long time, and I don't think you can call it anything other than a pretty resounding success.
So Pat Narduzzi met with the media yesterday, as he does on Mondays. What do you get the vibe like? What's the mindset from him coming off of the bye? I mean, I would assume it's to kind of flip the page because the games really start to matter starting on Saturday with an ACC opponent.
Yeah, I think there is a sense of urgency, but I think there's also a lot more confidence too. This team has, I think, proven some people wrong. You know, they look a lot stronger than many people, including myself, thought they would coming out of the gates. So they believe that they've earned a little bit of confidence. I think before the bye and going into that Youngstown State game, it was a lot of, we haven't done anything yet. We still need to stay focused and avoid any letdowns. And I think now it's about confidence. I think especially with this matchup going into North Carolina, I mean, going down to Chapel Hill, a place where Pitt as a program has never won a football game, I feel like they are looking for confidence and they want to feel confident going this opportunity. They don't want to believe in whatever boogeymen have spooked them down in Chapel Hill before, whatever kind of heartbreaking losses this program has experienced before at Keenan Memorial Stadium. They want to be confident. They feel they've earned that right to be favored in this game, to be undefeated going into conference play, and they really do think that they are contenders. I mean, they told us all offseason that 3-9 coming off that kind of season, a lot of the external expectations were, okay, get back to a bowl game. That's, kind of the baseline. That's really all you need to aim for at this point. And they dared to aim a little bit higher. And while, a week ago, 2 weeks ago was about proving something, I think this is about proving something in a bit of a different way. It's about kind of leveling up a little bit and announcing themselves a little bit to the rest of the conference that they are for real, and kind of extending that belief outside of Pittsburgh.
Stephen Thompson, Pitt beat writer of the Post-Gazette, joining us on the Fan Hotline. Stephen, as you look at this game, it seems like running the football is going to be the theme of this game for both teams. And we'll start with Pitt. Desmond Reed seems to be healthy, good to go. How much of a boost really is that to get him back in the lineup after kind of missing the Youngstown State game? It seemed like for precautionary reasons, but I mean, he's obviously been a huge catalyst for this offense. So getting him back has to be a giant boost for Pitt.
Absolutely. I mean, he is a rushing threat. He is a receiving threat. I think you're right. In this game, he is going to be a much bigger rushing threat than he will be a receiving threat. I mean, North Carolina not particularly strong against the run. They give up an average of over 120 yards a game. But Reed can hurt you in so many ways. I think he's been a safety, sort of safety blanket for, or a safety valve, whatever you want to call it, for Eli Holstein. I mean, these checkdowns that he throws to Reed end up turning into really, really explosive plays as well. So when Pitt does take the air, and North Carolina, they're not particularly great against the pass as well. So they're going to throw the ball quite a bit too. But It won't take a ton of chucking the ball down the field. Eli Holstein doesn't have to really be challenged that way, I think, in order for Pitt to create explosive plays. You know, against Youngstown State, he did have to use his receivers a lot more, had to use the tight ends a little bit more. But this week, he will have a full complement of pass catchers back, including Reed, who is dangerous from just about everywhere on the field, can do everything that you want a running back to do. I mean, everything from, you know, run in between the tackles, get the ball outside and bounce it outside for big runs. He can catch the ball. He can, you know, create big plays out of screens and short passes, but he can also pass protect too. He's a really much more of a complete back than I would have guessed he would have been before seeing him play in a game. And he's a huge, huge, huge part of this offense. Arguably, you know, I'd say outside of Holstein, the most important part of this offense, if you're asking me.
Yeah, and on the flip side, North Carolina, as far as being able to run the football, is, you know, and they've had some issues. They give up 70 to James Madison. They gave up 21 answered to a rival and lose in back-to-back weeks. But North Carolina tops in the ACC in being able to run the football, 208 yards a game, best in the conference. Pitt, on the flip side, eighth in the ACC in rush defense. And I think as fans watch the first four games of the season, they look at Pitt's defensive line and run defense and kind of be a little bit concerned. So how much should Pitt fans be concerned about North Carolina's ability to run the football, and how much of an impact could it have on the outcome in this one?
Well, it's interesting because the defensive line, I agree, has not been sparkling for all four games this year. I think they have gotten better, though. When you watch, I think, the Youngstown State game and even the West Virginia game a little bit closely, and you focus on the lines, there were times where Pitt's defensive linemen were holding up blockers, where they were kind of accounting for everyone on the offensive line. And then linebackers who had a chance to make a play in the hole weren't, you know, were getting caught behind their own defensive linemen or not taking aggressive enough of a step into the hole. And I know that's something that Pitt and linebackers coach Ryan Manilek has worked at a ton. They've worked on it over the bye week. They worked on it going into that Youngstown State game where they showed a little bit of improvement. But this is really, I think, going to come down to just fundamental tackling. Amarian Hampton's a big dude. You're going to have to wrap him up on first contact as best you can and then fly to the ball. It's going to have to be a gang tackling kind of day. Hampton's a big dude. I think he's north of 300 pounds. Or not 300 pounds, excuse me. That would be pretty impressive. But north of 200 pounds, has some speed too. So going to be about flying to the football and being really sound tackling, which Pitt has not been for most of this year. So that's the thing I'm watching the most, is their technique tackling and how they're able to wrap up Hampton on first contact.
Yeah, and back to the Pitt offense and Eli Holstein. I mean, you know, you look at the way he's been able to come back and lead Pitt to two really incredible wins against Cincinnati, and then, of course, at home against West Virginia in the backyard brawl. As he has become, you know, more familiar with the team, you know, as far as being able to throw the football, all of that, you can kind of see him not just become more confident, but really just kind of take ownership of the offense. And it is kind of remarkable, if you ask me, for a redshirt freshman who just started his first game of his career against Kent State back at the end of August, all of a sudden now is just kind of out there like a savvy veteran, is he not?
Absolutely. That is the one thing that you hear from just about every one of his teammates and every one of his coaches. I think he's made some really impressive throws. His ability to scramble and his toughness has been impressive too, but that serenity, the determination, you know, when he plays poorly, when he throws a pick, when he makes a mistake, when he misses a read, he takes a lot of responsibility for it. I think he's a little hard on himself, that fuels him. He becomes motivated, not, you know, down on himself. At halftime of the Cincinnati game, Pat Narduzzi, I guess after the game, he told the story from halftime of that Cincinnati game where Holstein apologized to his offensive coordinator and to Narduzzi, to his teammates, and said, that's not going to happen again. And he's been kind of right. You know, I think every time that Holstein has been challenged, every time that he hasn't played well, he's come back almost immediately and made some even more remarkable plays. I think his ability to shake off some of the miscues that he has had, because, you know, he has been very impressive, but he has not been perfect. So I think his ability to shake off those mistakes and, His ability to be mentally tough has been just as important to, you know, his arm strength, his accuracy, his ability to run, everything of the sort. Because, you know, I think he even talked to Pat Narduzzi at certain times in the 2 years prior to this season. And leadership was a big point for him in terms of searching for a quarterback. I think the play, the arm strength, all that stuff of Keaton Slovis, Phil Jurkovic, Nate Yarnell, and all the other guys that they've cycled through since Kenny Pickett left, you know, no one has really been able to match the leadership abilities that Kenny Pickett had, which you don't see much of those on the field. It's not super tangible, but they were really, really important when you ask people about the story of that 2021 season. Kenny's ability to lead them and to help them rebound from miscues or mistakes was critical to having the season that they've had. And Holstein so far seems to have the makeup of a guy who can be similar when he gets a little bit older and like you said, gets his feet under him more.
The other thing too, and we talked about Pitt trying to get a little bit healthier off of the bye because of obviously Desmond Reed coming back. It seems like defensive lineman in Pittsburgh native Sean Fitzsimmons should be close to 100% and potentially good to go on Saturday as well. That's a guy that showed glimpses of being pretty darn good. You know, you throw him in there at the spot with, you know, a guy like, you know, Nick James, who's been pretty darn good, and then Nakai Johnson and Jimmy Scott, guys that have kind of, you know, led the defensive front for the start of the season, Nate Matlack too. What does Sean Fitzsimmons kind of bring back into the lineup if he's good to go on Saturday as well?
Well, some experience, first of all. He's been in the program for a while now, but also some really nice athleticism. He's kind of a speed rusher. He's not particularly big. He fits more into a, you know, I'd say, I'm not saying he's this kind of player, but Kalijah Kansi, he fits more into that body type as opposed to, you know, people might remember Tyreek Jarrett, who was north of 300 pounds, or, you know, from last year, like a Devin Danielson or a Tyler Bentley or a David Green. So he's a little bit smaller, but more athletic, really quick hands, a good athlete. You know, will create some splash plays, especially rushing the passer, I think. You know, we'll see how he is against the run. He hasn't played football for a while, but it's a guy that I've been really excited to see play for a long time, and really just hoping that he can play. But, you know, as soon as he does get back on the field, that he stays on the field. If he does that, I think he can be a really, really good player for Pitt this season and beyond. So, you know, you hope he's healthy, and you hope that he can add some more depth to a defensive line that loves to rotate guys, but is also maybe looking to cut down the rotation a little bit, find some true starters, find some guys that can fill out this rotation in a little bit of a more select fashion. Just get the best guys out there and not have to worry necessarily so much about finding out who your best, you know, four or five guys are.
Stephen Thompson, Pitt beat writer of the Post-Gazette. Another thing, Stephen, that I think is sticking out a ton is the play at linebacker. Kyle Lewis has impacted games left and right to start the season. Same for Rasheem Biles and other guys, too. And the thing that kind of sticks out to me more than anything when you're talking about that group is how much fun that those guys are having out on the field, flying around the ball, making plays. I mean, would you echo those thoughts? And what have you made so far out of the play that, you know, a couple of those guys have shown in this season?
Yeah, I remember talking to you maybe either after the Kent State or before the Kent State game. And I said at the time, this is just a different kind of athlete than Pitt has had at linebacker maybe ever, like in a long time, at least you know, since I've been covering the team and following them since I was you know, a little kid. I can't remember guys who moved this fast at linebacker, who were this strong, who were this versatile too, guys who could both rush the passer, defend the run, and cover. So their kind of every down ability, excuse me, and their ability to come up with clutch plays. You know, Kyle Lewis's interception in the backyard brawl, had another pick against Youngstown State. Rasheem Biles has had more than a few really timely sacks where he's been on a well-timed blitz and just looked like he was shot out of a cannon going after the quarterback that never really even had a chance. So their down-to-down ability, but the clutch playmaking has been my favorite part of them. They're a lot of fun in that sense. And I don't want to leave out the play of middle linebacker Brandon George, who I think has been really, really excellent, a guy in his first year starting in his sixth year of college football. But has stepped in there and been, it's been a seamless transition from, you know, Servassier Dennis 2 years ago to, you know, Shane Simon a year ago, who was a pretty darn good player for them too, to George now. So you're happy for a guy who stuck it out for so long and then finally makes the most of his starting opportunity. Brandon George has been a linchpin to all this too, kind of allowing Biles and Lewis to make those explosive plays while he shores up everything in the middle and communicates and gets play calls in and everything like that.
All right, Stephen, before I let you go, obviously a big one on Saturday against North Carolina. They come home the following week and play a Cal team that's riding high and has a big game this week against Miami. And they're the lone team in the Atlantic Coast Conference that has yet to play a conference game. And the last eight are against conference opponents, the last three really tough games against Clemson, Louisville, Boston College. But before we get there, two games, one away, one home to start the ACC slate, and then another bye week. How much are we going to find out about this Pitt team in the next couple of Saturdays?
A whole heck of a lot. I hate to just go back to what I said at the beginning, but, you know, 4-0 is 4-0, and 6-0 is 6-0. And while Cincinnati and West Virginia, I think, are some pretty quality teams, I think North Carolina and Cal are steps up in that sense. I mean, they're different in a lot of ways. I mean, North Carolina, I think, is more explosive. They can really score. California is going to try to grind you down and wear the clock down and inflict some body blows. So I think that's the biggest thing that we're going to learn is Pitt able to beat different kinds of opponents? Is Pitt able to, because West Virginia and Cincinnati, very similar in terms of, the way they like to play offense. They're a little bit differently defensively, but North Carolina and Cal, I think, pose two really drastically different types of teams, but also in two very drastically different environments. So we are going to determine, I think, if Pitt is capable of winning in two different places. And then also, you know, something that we've talked about really since West Virginia is their focus. Pitt is prone to let down games. So I'd like to think, you know, Pitt's favored against North Carolina. I'd expect if they beat North Carolina, they'll be favored against Cal at home. So will you be able to take this momentum? Will you be able to keep the same energy going from week to week and not feel like that you have done anything? Are you going to keep striving? Are you going to keep pushing towards the top of the conference if you can? Or are you going to be susceptible to, to this year's version of a Western Michigan or a Miami loss from that 2021 season where you were clearly the superior team, but you played down to your opponent's level. So take care of business in these 2 weeks. I think they're going to be favored in both games, and Pitt has a chance to really turn this season into something special if they can do that and pull off two wins over these next 2 weeks.
Stephen Thompson, he covers the Pitt Panthers for the Post-Gazette. Basketball season, Stephen, in about a month or so. I don't know about you, man, but I'm really, really excited to watch the Panthers take the hardwood. It's an interesting non-conference schedule. The ACC schedule just came out. The press release a couple of days ago, too, they lose Amsel Dalalich for 6 weeks. It looks like he'll miss the start of the season. The sharpshooting big guy from overseas. What do you make of the Pitt basketball team, real quick, before I let you go, and what they could accomplish this year as well?
Yeah, I think it'll be really exciting. We've heard everything about the scheduling, how weak Pitt's non-conference schedule has been, not even just this past year, this past season when they got left out of the NCAA tournament, but even going back to 2022 and 2023, that was a big knock against Pitt. So Jeff Capel will certainly address that. They're going to play five of six against power conference opponents going from the end of November to the start of December. So, you know, the non-conference schedule shouldn't be a problem. I think the biggest thing is Pitt got a little bit better, I think. I really like the way this team is constructed. I think a lot of the pieces really fit together. But the ACC got a lot deeper. There's no, you know, lowly Louisville. Even Boston College won 20 games last year. There are a lot of teams, even with the addition of SMU and Cal and Stanford, there are really no easy outs, like even less than there was before. So, this is a very deep, this is a much deeper league than there was before. And if Pitt emerges, if Pitt ends up in the same spot that they were last year, a four seed going in the ACC tournament, I think you can feel really good about their chances of making the NCAA tournament. I don't think there's going to be as much ACC disrespect by come March this year.
All righty, man. Appreciate you. Stephen Thompson, check him out, covering Pitt for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll talk soon, brother. Take care.
Thanks, Jack. Have a good one, buddy.
You too. That's Stephen Thompson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette covering the Panthers. We'll talk Pitt on the other side of the timeout, and if you want to circle back to the Steelers, we can surely do that as well. 412-928-9370 is the number. It's also the number of the text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Your phone calls coming up on the other side of the break. I'm Jack Hillgrove with you on Sports Radio. 93.7 The Fan. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. My name's Jack Hillgrove. I'm with you for about another hour or so right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. At 10:35, it is the nightly sports call on KDKA Plus and right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Richie Walsh from KDKA TV and Pony taking you up until then. So happy to be with you. Happy to be talking sports with you. Mentioned at the top of the show, it's the first time I've been on the airwaves in about a month. Last time I had to do it from my bedroom apartment with a fever of 101 degrees and COVID. So better conditions, better mindset, better vibes, all that stuff since the last time we spoke. So happy to be alongside with you this evening. We just got done talking to Stephen Thompson, Pitt beat writer of the Post-Gazette, and we're going to spend pretty much the remainder of the next hour, 30 minutes or so, talking about the Panthers. First, as far as the football program goes, and then before the 10 o'clock hour begins, I want to talk about some Pitt hoops because I am fired up for Pitt basketball. The next 2 weeks for me are Pitt football season. You know, you look at the win in Cincinnati, whoop-dee-doo. I was elated as somebody who roots for the Panthers. And then they come home and beat West Virginia in one of the best games, Steelers or Pitt, that Acrisure Stadium has ever seen. A phenomenal football contest. 73 points against Youngstown State. Pat Narduzzi said after the game, you know, it's what we should be doing to teams like that, and I agree. So you go 4-0. Throw it out the window. Throw it so far out the window. Throw your arm out throwing it out the window. North Carolina is a team that is going to be pissed off and playing at home, a venue that Pitt has never won in. 0-7 all time. And Cal, 3-1, will be coming off of College Game Day against the 8th-ranked team in the country at home. That crowd is going to be electric. I think that's going to be a very close ball game. I think Miami finally is living up to Miami expectations, but Cal's going to give them everything that they have. And what I think is going to happen is that Cal will play them tough, lose a tough game at home, and Cal will be pissed off coming across the country to play the Panthers. We've seen that not be an issue whatsoever so far, except maybe for Washington against the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers on last Friday. But from an ACC standpoint, Stanford makes the trip to Syracuse. The Cardinal beat the Orange. And Cal specifically made a trip into different time zones a couple of weeks ago on the road in an SEC environment against Auburn. They win 21-14. So the whole, they got to make the trip out here. Bupkis, if you ask me. And we've seen that elsewhere across the country so far this season. So for Pitt, the next 2 weeks, I think makes or breaks the season. And Stephen Thompson, who covers the Panthers week in and week out, I asked him flat out, and if you missed it, you can rewind it on the Odyssey app or online and check it out. I asked him flat out, how much are we going to find out about this Panthers football program in the next 2 weeks? And it's a hell of a whole lot, basically, is what his answer was. And I couldn't agree more. You look at it from the lens of North Carolina next week. The top rushing team in the ACC. Pitt's defensive line, a concern. Even in the Kent State game in week one, I thought they gave up unnecessary yardage, unnecessary time in the pocket for a really bad Kent State program to find open receivers downfield. Now, granted, that was week one, and Pitt's gotten a lot better since then, and two close wins in back-to-back weeks against Cincy and WVU prove that. But the Panthers still have a lot to work on defense. Still have a lot to figure out on defense. Now, the linebacking core, very good. Kyle Lewis, Rasheem Biles, Brandon George clogging up the middle. I'm impressed with what the linebackers have brought to the table. And having those guys and the way that they're playing against, you know, one of the top rushing teams, or the top rushing team, I should say, in the ACC, makes me feel pretty darn good. Like Amarian Hampton, already with 658 yards on the ground through five games, six touchdowns through five games. Bowling ball almost, with a little bit of breakaway speed at 6'2", 220. J.J. Jones on the outside, their leading receiver, 6'2", 210. You know, time and time again in Pat Narduzzi defenses, we've seen cornerbacks out on islands and left out to dry in some cases. That's just the way that Pitt's defense is structured, and it helps defensive backs get ready for the NFL. We see, you know, Damar Hamlin, Jason Pinnock, Avonte Maddox, other guys, Dane Jackson, and I'll be forgetting a couple, Damari Mathis, Brandon Hill, as I just pull names out of my rear end. But the point is like these guys, you know, might have struggled a little bit in college being left out on islands, and all of a sudden they become day three picks in the NFL and they find their way on NFL rosters and boom, they're key contributors in NFL secondaries. That doesn't help Pitt's defense at the college level. You know, it frustrates me from time to time watching the defensive backfield struggle. And it's going to struggle a little bit more because Pitt will be without Javon McIntyre for the first half, or I'm sorry, P.J. O'Brien from the first half, because he had a second-half targeting penalty against Youngstown State. Now, Cruz Brookins, who's probably going to step up in that role, has played well. Javon McIntyre, Donovan McMillan, the safeties have played well, but they're going to miss O'Brien for the first half against an ACC team. And again, they've never won there. 0-7 all time against the Tar Heels on the road. And they've struggled against North Carolina since they've joined the ACC, period. So, yeah, I mean, you look at it through the lens of North Carolina gave up 70 to James Madison. North Carolina gave up 21 unanswered to Duke and lost. They're 3-2. And then there were questions of, is Mack Brown going to come back? Especially after that James Madison game, there were rumors that he might not return. So North Carolina struggling, yes, but they're going to be upset about it, and they're going to play hard and tough against Pitt. North Carolina 12-5 all time against the Panthers. And since joining the ACC, Pitt's only beat them twice. In 2019, in overtime, in 2021, in overtime. The last 2 years, Pitt's fallen to the Tar Heels. Last year at Acrisure Stadium, 41-24. Drake May dicing them up. And then again in 2022, it was 42-24. So this is a team that's had Pitt's number. Mack Brown has had Pitt's number since he's gone back there. And then the script flips. No pun intended. Pitt script. See what I did there? Cal comes home. 3:30. That game time just got announced yesterday. They're playing tough football. I mean, the Bears and quarterback Fernando Mendoza have played extremely well. They go on the road and beat an SEC team in Auburn. And hell, they might be coming off of a big-time win on Saturday against the Canes. I'm going to pick Miami to win that ball game, but I said at the beginning of the segment, I think Cal plays them tough. So what we find out about this Panthers ball club in the next couple of weeks will be crucial to how we look at them for the rest of the year. Because then all of a sudden, as we look at them at 4-0, riding high, feeling good, and then they become potentially 4-2 and start the ACC slate 0-2, we'll be singing a different tune about Pitt. I don't think that will happen. I think the safe bet is to pick them to go 1-1, but they can also be 2-0. And if they are 2-0 and then they're 6-0 going into a Thursday night against Syracuse, boy oh boy, are we in for something special with Pat Narduzzi and the Panthers. Let me know what you think. Tweet me at JackWTOV9 if you want to talk Pitt football. Give us a ring at 412-928-9370. If you want to revisit the Steelers, we can do that as well. Coming up, we'll talk more Pitt, but flip it to the hardwood because I'm fired up for the Pitt basketball program this year as well. And then we'll see wherever the wind blows us for the first 30 minutes or so, the 10 o'clock hour before the end of the program and the nightly sports call here on Sports Radio 93.7. The Fan. Jack Hillgrove with you until 10:35. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Fan Evening Show. All righty. Moving along here on the Fan Evening Show. Time flies when you're having fun, so they say. We're having a good time always here on Sports Radio 93.7. The Fan, Jack Hillgrove with you until 10:35 tonight. The nightly sports call getting underway at 10:35 right here on Sports Radio 93.7. The Fan with Richie Walsh and Andrew Filippone. We're talking Pitt. Talking about Pitt football in the last segment. And if you want to chime in, feel free to do so at 412-928-9370. I think it's make or break for the Panthers these next 2 weeks. I'd feel good at 1-1 to get to 5-1 between Cal and North Carolina. I'd feel horrible, downright scared, if they drop these next two games, regardless of how they go, to get to 4-2 and then start the ACC slate 0-2. And then if they can find a way to win these next two ball games, watch out for what this Panthers football program can accomplish. 1 month from Friday, Monday, November 4th, the Peterson Event Center will see basketball once again. The Pitt men's basketball program, it begins play against Radford on Monday, November 4th. Joel Nelson, what is Radford's nickname?
Radford.
I didn't know this until I clicked on it.
So it's got to be something out of the ordinary, right? Or not out of the ordinary, but, you know, not like Bulldogs or anything. Something uncommon.
The only hint that I will give you is that their mascot is one of two, I believe, in the WPIAL.
Oh, wow. Man, I've got to take a wild guess. Terriers?
No. Close. Kinda like me. Nah, not really close. I'm sorry. I was just trying to help you out there. It's the Highlanders.
The Highlanders.
And okay. The only two Highlanders I can think of in the WPIL are McGuffey and my alma mater in Baldwin.
Baldwin. I was just going to say the Fighting Highlanders.
Yes. That's one of the pet peeves of people. Oh, the Baldwin Highlanders. I'm like, no, they're the Fighting Highlanders. But there you go. So Radford, the opponent for the Panthers in game number one. It goes Radford, Murray State, Gardner-Webb, and then the backyard brawl between the Panthers and the Mountaineers on November the 15th. Another FCS equivalent of college basketball. I wouldn't even know what you would call it at the Division I level. VMI comes to the Pete on the 18th of November, and then it gets tough. I mean, you go three straight road games at Ohio State, at Mississippi State, and then since the ACC went to 20 conference games, they sprinkle one in there before the lengthy conference schedule begins at Virginia Tech on Saturday, December the 7th. And then two more non-conference with Eastern Kentucky and Sam Houston. And then boom, it's conference play. The other one in there as well is LSU, that in the Greenbrier. And then they'll play one more. I believe it's between UCF or Wisconsin in the Greenbrier down there in West Virginia. The non-conference slate, tough, and we talked about it at the in the beginning of the 9 o'clock hour with Stephen Thompson. It is UCF in Wisconsin. I needed a second to make sure I wasn't BSing you. One of the biggest pet peeves that people had with the Pitt basketball schedule last year when it came to selecting them for the NCAA tournament was the non-conference schedule wasn't strong enough. And you know what? You go back and look at it, and I don't think they're all that incorrect. Florida, Oregon State, and Missouri, along with West Virginia, the only non-conference Power Six teams that they played. Florida last year ended up 24-11, 11-7 in SEC play. Missouri, not very good, if I remember correctly, last year. And that loss was at home to the Tigers in a game that Pitt absolutely should have won, 71-64. Missouri last year, winless at one point in SEC play. And then they were able to rally a little bit. Actually, they finished 24-9. No, wrong year. I clicked on the wrong one. 23-24. There we go. Winless in SEC play. They went 0-18. And then West Virginia struggled last year, of course, the whole debacle with Bob Huggins and having to settle for an interim head coach. They've got a new man now in Darian DeVries, who I had a chance to interview when he visited the Wheeling area at work. Guy that I think will bring a lot of energy and a lot of pride back to West Virginia's basketball program. That game will be tougher. I think Pitt ends up winning that game, but I think that'll still be a tougher game. Now Pitt has it at home, so that'll be nice. But it's a tough non-conference slate for the Panthers. No doubt about it. And you know something? I don't know that I'm all that concerned with it. Pitt, to me, I think will have the best season since this resurgence of the program a couple of years ago. This year, I look at who they were able to acquire in the transfer portal. Damian Dunn out of Houston, a combo guard who I think will probably end up in the starting lineup alongside Jalen Lowe. I look at Cameron Corin, stretch four physical big from Florida State, comes over from the Seminoles. And then what they were able to bring back. Jalen Lowe, going to be one of the top point guards in the ACC this year. I don't think there's any question about it. Papa Conte, a highly touted big man that unfortunately was out for the season last year because of an injury. He should be good to go. They've upgraded the backcourt, or the front court rather, tremendously. Federico, while he became a fan favorite, struggled defensively and a lot offensively last year as well. They upgrade with a healthy Papa Conte and with Cam Corin. And you also throw a guy in like Zach Austin, who I thought was a tremendous role player in the time that he saw last year. No, I mean, he was a starter, but, you know, not the main guy on offense. 6'7", big guy that can shoot it a little bit. And, of course, the twins and Guillermo and Jorge. They're deep. They're talented. They're athletic. And I think the key will be the backcourt. I think the key will be Ishmael Leggett, Jalen Lowe, Damian Dunn. Will Brandon Cummings, Nelly's younger brother, see some time. I think that's remains to be seen. I think he's going to be a really good player at one point. Not Nelly, a.k.a. Joel Nelson, back there behind the glass, but Nelly Cummings from Lincoln Park and kind of helped spark this resurgence of Pitt basketball. I think the backcourt will be the key. I think if Jalen Lowe lives up to expectation, I think if Dunn can fill the roles that he's assigned, and I think the best course of action is for Leggett to be kind of the sixth man that he was last year. If you remember correctly, Leggett started the year as a starter, gets knocked out with a wrist injury that allowed for Lowe and Carrington to enter the starting lineup, and Leggett came off the bench and was phenomenal. And I think one of the things that was so great about the team that made the tournament 2 years ago is Nike Sabandi off the bench and how tremendous he was in the minutes that he played. Yeah, I mean, he was the first guy off the bench, but he still ended up averaging like 20-some minutes a night. Leggett last year, kind of the same thing. Now, that last game in the ACC tournament against North Carolina, they lose by 7. He plays 28 minutes. In the quarterfinal against Wake Forest, 35 minutes. So Leggett will probably have a similar role this year, and I think that if they're able to figure that out and kind of succeed in the backcourt, this Pitt team is going to be poised for a run, and I think will be poised to make the NCAA tournament, even though they probably should have last year. But again, we talked about that. They didn't because the non-conference schedule sucked in the eyes of the committee. It doesn't suck this year. It's going to be tough. Game against LSU and UCF or Wisconsin in the Greenbrier will be tough games. At Mississippi State, West Virginia at home, Ohio State on the road. Like, even if they don't play well in those games and fall, it'll get them ready for the ACC slate. And if you look at a couple of tough losses in the non-conference to a team like